require stronger package warnings and inspect manufacturers. The U.S. president plans to sign the bill into law.
Welcome back to today's edition of The Agenda with me, Yvonne Ridley, and studio guests Taji Mustafa, Wajid Shamsul Hassan, Farooq Bangash and Amar Gowrie. As we went into a break, I asked, who is the Pakistani Taliban leader? Well, the answer is Baitullah Masood, the 34-year-old pro-Taliban militant commander, or Pakistani tribal guerrilla, as some refer to him. Farooq, what is the difference between the Taliban in Afghanistan and the Taliban in Pakistan?
I would say by and large they are one. The Taliban have got a unified command. They've got, in terms of manpower, weapons and leadership, they are quite united. You know, now it is just that they have been divided by this Durand line. Baitullah Masood stands
to be... The Durand line is the line.
Yeah, divides Afghanistan and Pakistan. Mm-hmm. I would say the Pashtuns. They divide the Pashtuns astride both the countries. Baitullah Masood stands to be a unique and unexampled figure who rules this part of the country. In terms of his tribe, many a times I have come out with a lot of debates on him that it is only this tribe. We've got 13 tribes among Pashtuns. This is the only tribe, Masood tribe, who would never ever succumb or surrender to any sort of foreign subjugation or foreign oppression. I think America was quite successful when they launched their operation after 9/11 in eastern Afghanistan. They found a person like him. Now, since there has been interdiction missions in South Waziristan and a lot many have been tortured, victimized, and people are really revengeful, Baitullah Masood took advantage of that, and he really prepared ground for a long term conventional war in Pakistan against our own people. I would say that the only...
So he set out to the position he's in today, where there is this carnage and 2 million refugees.
When we see 2 million refugees, I don't agree with that even as well, because the area they have migrated from or they have been displaced from, that is called Swat or Bunay, and even 70% of those people were otherwise in Karachi and Sindh area, finding their jobs and living, looking for their livelihood.
And
so it's not that big number. It's just exaggerated, I would say, that's totally...
The figures that we used are from the United Nations.
But do you believe in United Nations figure or statistics? I would say no. And do you believe in our government's figure? No.
But the camera doesn't lie, and the vast image... And I was actually in Peshawar in November and saw... huge sections, maybe 500,000 of people who were displaced then.
That is very true. I told you that all the southern districts of NWFP and the northern districts now have already been displaced from last 1 year, over 1 year. But have we ever got any sort of aid or support from the government? No, totally no. Whatever the money is coming in is either spent by on the corrupt politicians or leaders, or of course they are augmenting the military operation in that.
I think if we go back to the question which we usually ask, there's a confusion about Baitullah Masood, because last year when some of the Pakistani journalists wanted to go and interview him, we know that he does not give face on interviews. All the interviews Pakistani journalists were told need to be over the shoulder. His face not to be seen. So tomorrow, any bearded man with a turban can be killed saying that he's Baitullah Masood. The question was that Pakistani army knew where the generals were going. They were taken there by the ISPR. My question is that if our telephone cells, cellular telephones are bugged, if Pakistan army, ISPR, government agencies, they know where these generals are going, not just one, APTN, Reuters, international agencies, Pakistani journalists, they go interview him, come back, he talks to them directly. You know, if this guy is such a nasty character, if journalists can go up to him, interview him, why the Pakistani government cannot take him out? So there's a confusion there. You know, whether this man needs to be alive, needs to be used, and that's why these numbers. Pakistani government now is desperately wanting the international community to foot the bill for these people, you know, who have left their areas. So there is politics at work here as well, that collateral loss of life should be minimal in Sawat and adjoining areas, while Pakistani army tried to take out these 4,000, 5,000. But again, the figures, Yvonne, are very confusing because, you know, another Pakistani military general who was head of the public relations, Shoka Sultan, during the times of Musharraf, he came on television in Pakistan and said that, you know, there are only 300 to 500 Talibans in Fatah areas. For last 4 years, Pakistan army is trying to eliminate. Either the numbers are wrong, or the mathematics is horribly wrong, or either the people are coming from other parts of the world to fight Pakistan and Americans in this region because it is a landlocked area. Who is giving these Taliban arms? Not Pakistan. There are international actors.
Well, that is a good question. Who is arming them and who is funding them?
One thing which is very clear in this whole scenario, I call it war by confusion, that the Americans have muddied the water. So the last few weeks, Hillary Clinton, General Petraeus, the Taliban are about to overrun Islamabad, the nuclear weapons are going to fall into the hands of terrorists, Muslims are going to take over. And by doing this, and then also all over Pakistan, in peaceful places like Lahore, you had bombs going off. Now, when you have a foreign power, a hostile power, America, we know what it's done in Iraq, created chaos and mayhem, turned Sunni against Shia. When you have that kind of confusion, it then allows this foreign power to go in militarily and do all sorts of things. And so I think this is where we are. We did not get here overnight in Pakistan, but the seeds were sown post 9/11 when America went into the region. The drone attacks, the Pakistani government talks about the writ of the state and stopping the Taliban in Swat. When the drones are killing people in Waziristan for the last God knows when, what did the state do? Zardari does not give a damn about that. He did not. He went all the way to America to shake the hands of the same people who are killing people in Pakistan. So they shouldn't give me this argument about he cares for the Pakistani people. He wants to help the Pakistani people.
You don't believe in
Zardari
elected leaders.
Zardari is the 10%. Give me a Pakistani other than lackeys and apologists who believes that Zardari is a man of honor. He's called Mr. 10%. They said he took over the country. Now he's Mr. 100%. Don't give me this kind of argument. Come on, let's deal with the reality. The root of this issue is America in the region. That's the root of the issue. Let's not run away from that.
Well, if I can just ask the ambassador, I mean, let's look at this issue of the drone attacks.
There is no use of discussing with the gentleman. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know how to address people.
Well, everybody's entitled to their opinions, and as usual, we have many opinions.
I can be abusive. I can be abusive. He's talking of 10%. 10 years the man is spent in jail. Billions were spent to prosecute him, and they couldn't do it. They couldn't find anything.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us. I'm Saeed Pourreza. It's only a few hours since the polls have closed in Iran's 10th presidential election. We're going to take you live to Iran's Interior Ministry, the Electoral Commission there. Press TV's Gisu Misha Ahmadi joins me live now with the latest on the results. Gisu, good evening.
Good evening, Saeed. As you know, it's been a very busy day. A lot of people turned out at the polling stations, and we've been watching carefully what's been happening around the country and abroad, along you, of course. And right now, we're actually waiting for the initial official results to be announced. However, Saeed, it's interesting for you to know that Mr. Mousavi has held a press conference during which he has claimed that he is going to be the winner of this election. Now, this is very interesting because there are no official results announced yet. We still don't even know the official results of the voter turnout. Actually, right now, you can see right behind me, Mr. Danishu is going to announce the initial results right now. So it's very surprising to see that Mr. Mousavi has claimed that he is the winner of this election while no official results haven't been announced yet. Over to you.
All right, we're going to have to wait just a few minutes before Mr. Donoghue starts speaking to tell us about the preliminary results of the 10th presidential elections. Is there any information as to which of the challengers are ahead at this point?
Well, according to initial results that I have received, of course, this is unofficial. As you can see, the official results are going to be announced right now. But according to the unofficial results that I have, it seems that President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the incumbent president, is 10% ahead. And it seems that more than 70% of the voters, of the eligible voters, have turned out to cast their votes.
All right, Gisu, I guess we're going to have to cut you off now and listen into that press conference there. Mr. Kamran Donoghue, the head of Iran's election commission. Thank you very much for now, Gisu. We can now go in there and listen to Mr. Kamran Donoghue, I believe, who is going to tell us about the preliminary results of the 10th presidential polls in Iran to find out which of the challengers is ahead and perhaps who may be the winner of this election in Iran. Let's go in there and listen. Despite all the things that have been said in the past 3-4 months, still people have shown their support, and this nation and our dear people have left no room for any argument for the enemies of this system, and they will not ever do that. I'm going to tell you about the number of the ballot boxes, the ballots in those boxes that have been counted, ballot boxes from around the Islamic Iran, up until 10 to 12 local time. 10 to 12, that's 10 to midnight local time. In other words, 11:45 or 11:50. The ballot boxes that have been counted, 8,801 ballot boxes have been looked into. Which is 19.42% of all the ballot boxes. The number of the ballots, 19.2%. The number of all the ballots that have been cast, 5,588 ballots that have been counted. Of
5,588
from the 5,588, I will announce the number of the ballots according alphabetically. Incumbent President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has earned 3,466,548. So 3,466,548 votes. In other words, 69.04% of the votes have gone to Mr. Ahmadinejad, Mr. Rezaei, the other challenger, Mohsen Rezaei Mirqaed, 81,500, which is the equivalent of 1.62%. I repeat, 1.62%. Mr. Karoubi, the other challenger, 45,453, which is the equivalent of 9%.
جناب آقای میرحسین موسوی
میرحسین موسوی خامنه 1,425,678, which is the equivalent of
42% کل آرایی که خدمتون
عرض کردم. 4.42%. Thanks very much for listening.
And that was head of Iran's Election Commission, Kamran Donishu, giving us an update of the votes so far counted. Well, so far he said that 8,801 ballots have been cast. 19.42% of the votes have been counted. Ahmadinejad is in the lead with 69.4% of the votes. And we'll bring you updates on that news as soon as it comes to us here on Press TV. Thanks for watching.
So that's why I personally think that, you know, as far as, you know, we saw in Iraq how America went there and embedded themselves again, you know, for natural resources. Now they're in Afghanistan for the future resources, which are in Central Asia. They do not actually want these resources to go to countries like China and India, which are emerging markets for the next 50 years, to go through them independently. They actually want these resources to go through American and British companies. And that is why, because Pakistan has a historical, you know, relationship with America, they have been used by the Americans. I wish that Pakistan moves slightly away and, like Iran, said that, you know, if you want to be doing the business in Afghanistan, do it yourself. We are not your partners. We will fight our war. And thank you very much. That is...
What is the relationship with America? Is it an equal relationship, an equal friendship?
We are supposed to be their very trusted allies in the war against terrorism. And we have been since 1954. As a matter of fact, I remember a military dictator, Ayub Khan, saying that we are the most special ally of the United States east of Suez. Ever since then, the policy has remained the same. Whatever the government, it has remained a very good relationship with the United States. So today even, but this war itself is a war against, you know, being fought to save Pakistan, not to save Afghanistan or the
you
United States.
You genuinely believe that
I genuinely believe. Pakistan was created by a secular person. Pakistan was supposed to be a secular country. All these people are trying to impose an ideology which does not exist anywhere, which only exists in some half-baked minds who cannot even tell me what is the system of succession in Islam. You know, these people are nitwits. They don't know what they are talking, you know. And they are trying to impose a system which is more or less a pagan system.
But you were saying this about 5,000 Pakistani Taliban. Yeah. Surely 5,000, doesn't matter how well armed they are, and I don't believe that they have state-of-the-art weaponry, surely they cannot take over a whole country with the seventh largest army in the world.
You have not seen the state-of-the-art arms that they carry. When they saw them, Sufi Muhammad came into Sawat, they had the best vehicles with them. They had rocket launchers on the shoulders. They are very well equipped.
Who's funding them?
Yes, exactly. Yes, who is funding them? They are the same masters who took Mullah Omar's colleague to Unicoil, to Texas, to sign an agreement for oil and gas exploration.
He's talking about Americans. Have you told the Americans?
Americans know it.
He can't say that to the Americans.
Yes, he's the PPP man.
No,
the roots of this, okay, let me tell you, they're all the creations of the Americans.
You know what? We're getting away. I think we're getting away from the one.
This whole party, this organization. Created by the intelligence.
I think we're getting away from the wider issue.
No, I'm sticking to the wider issue.
The question today is militancy in Pakistan.
What it is.
And what is the root of that? What is the root of this problem? To focus today and to simply, or the ambassador saying 5,000 people here.
Well, it doesn't matter the number. We have to save the country.
Now, save the country. America has been bombing people in Wana. He did not. The government did not try to save the country. Nearly every week, American drones violate Pakistan's sovereignty. Americans in Pakistan kidnapped a Pakistani doctor, Dr. Afia Siddiqui. Where was the government to save her?
America, well, our government is, yes,
so
trying to save
idea,
her.
This idea Again, that the Pakistani government cares about the people. Democracy in Pakistan today has delivered a political leadership that is willing to turn Pakistani soldiers, sons of Pakistan of Islam, against Pakistani
Islam.
So you're turning people against each other. The only person who benefits. You know, the ambassador talks about history. He doesn't know his history. Pakistan came out of Kya. You ask any Pakistani, why was Pakistan created? What's the answer? La ilaha illallah.
No, so he's saying I dispute that. You don't know anything about Pakistan's slogan.
It was not even a slogan at the time of partition. It's okay to kill Pakistanis on behalf of America.
I tell you, let me quote the speech of Mr. Jinnah, 11th of August 1947. Pakistan will not be a theocratic state. In my Pakistan, people will be free to go to the temples, to their churches, to their synagogues.
Is that why you're killing? You want to kill 2 million?
And they will be equal citizens in my Pakistan. And he also said, I tell you, I quote exact words, religion will not have anything to do with the affairs of the state, with the business of the state.
So he was so clear about Pakistan. These rogues from outside are trying to take over Pakistan.
We would not allow them.
The Pakistani state is weakened.
You know, there are just 2 or 3% people. Rest of the country is backing this operation. The parliament has backed the operation. The all parties conference has backed the operation. Everybody is backing the operation. Even Mr. Nawaz Sharif is backing the operation.
This operation weakens Pakistan.
As independent voices, our only concern is that, you know, because we do not support any political party, but of course, in a democracy, you know, people have elected those governments, whether we like People's Party or Nawaz Sharif or not, that's beside the point. But we are afraid that this action, you know, will not get to its natural conclusion. These Taliban will not be eliminated. Frankly, this is a fear.
That's true.
As far as these displaced people,
this is again about 5,000.
Yes. No, you're right.
You know, 5,000.
Again,
if those 500 people 5 years ago
are still fighting, Amir Wari is not trying to speak like a war veteran.
This weakens Pakistan.
Well, army is there. Army is fighting these Taliban, and they are, I'm sure, capable of getting rid of them.
Can I clarify a couple of things?
When you say getting rid of them, you mean killing them.
Okay.
Getting rid of them out of Pakistan, wherever they go, wherever they came from. They should go back to Ethiopia, Somalia, Chechnya, Bosnia, wherever they are.
The way they have killed people.
As usual, Pakistan politics brings out great passions. We've come to an end of today's show. I'm sure that this debate will continue, but our time is up. I would like to know what you think of today's discussion and if you think a turban revolution is about to sweep Pakistan. Here's Lauren Gunnius to tell you how to make your voice heard on this show.
Hello. Our electronic mailbox has been full of comments this week about Pakistan and its military response to the emergence of the Taliban in the northwest frontier province. But as today's show reveals, not everything is black and white. Londoner Nabil Hanif gives us a history lesson of what he thinks started the trouble and blames the events of 2004 when General Pervez Musharraf sent about 80,000 troops in South Waziristan for the first time in Pakistan's history. He writes, "They targeted the locals and Afghan Pashtuns who were supporting the opposition in Afghanistan. This led to a tribal resistance against the army." Meanwhile, Imran Chowdhury says, "The Pakistani people have been fed a warped version of what is righteous by Zardari. What moral authority does he have? I think it comes from his British and American masters. So on that basis, his whole campaign will fail. And Latin American Adam O'Connell from Colombia is critical of the Taliban leader Baitullah Mahshood and the Pakistani Taliban, who he says are going around killing Sufis and Muslims just because they have different opinions about Islam. Both sides in this conflict are messed up, and both are working for outsiders being played against each other. Other recent agenda shows are still attracting discussion, including the one which focused on the UK's counterterrorism laws fueling xenophobia. Joe Arlati from Spain writes, what has happened to Britain and its international reputation for being a leader in human rights and justice? When did secret evidence come into use? Great show, but shocking content. Well, Jeff Fitzpatrick sent an email after watching the program asking why Israel bombed a convoy in Sudan. The Englishman asks, why are we just hearing about this now? Fascinating agenda, and the fact that Israel was forced to leak the story about the bombing tends to suggest its strategy was to send a message to the outside world that it will defend its borders by any means. The message was obviously intended for the Iranians. If you have any suggestions for future programs, then please let us know. And if you agree or disagree with any of these comments, then write to us at theagenda@presstv.com or look us up on Facebook and MySpace. We also take calls on 0208-728-6461. That's +44 208-728-6461 for international callers. If you'd like to watch previous agendas, all you have to do is go to www.presstv.com, click on the programs icon, scroll down, click on the agenda icon, and there's a whole archive of shows to watch at your leisure. Until next time, take care and thank you for watching. Back to you, Yvonne.
Thanks for that, Lauren. Well, that just remains for me to say a very big thank you to all.